Sometimes the most interesting stories get left on the cutting room floor. I'm Julie Amacher. Each week I share a new classical recording with you featuring some of the world's best musicians on new classical tracks. I'm counting down six of my favorite interviews from 2016. It's New Classical Tracks Uncut, giving you a chance to hear more about your favorite musicians and their newest recordings. This week, our final conversation features composer John Lunn of Downton Abbey fame. You and I spoke a few years ago.
We did.
Right after you won your Emmy, I think. Right after the third season.
Yeah, very probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the new Ultimate Collection is out, featuring music from all six seasons. And I'm wondering, because I know you selected this music, as I'm looking like it's CD1, can you tell me how this is divided up? Because you said it pretty much goes chronologically. Is it like the first five tracks are from the first season or something like that?
So it's sort of, I mean, it's a little bit rough because obviously some of the tunes actually go through all six series anyway. I'd say CD1 is mainly series 1 to 3 and CD2 is series 4 to 6. It's rough because obviously, you also want to kind of try and make it sort of satisfying as a, as a listening, experience as well. But we did think it would be nice to give people, the idea that they could actually kind of sit down and listen to both CDs and kind of get a feeling of the progression of all six series.
I just had this sort of fantasy in my mind, like putting on this recording and having a Downton Abbey party. Like everybody dresses up and now you've got the soundtrack to go with it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of ideal, for that, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of made for it.
So how did you go about selecting the pieces that are featured?
Well, I think one kind of slightly frustrating thing I think about soundtrack CDs is that you're quite often the music that you write is held back by the picture and what how you have to fit it to picture, and with Downton there was a lot of tunes that I was kind of really pleased with that, but actually when we went back to recordings that we'd used for particular episodes, the cues themselves were kind of slightly unsatisfying, and whereas with the Downton Abbey suite, which I'd sort of written as a standalone concert piece, I decided to actually do that for many more tracks of the CD. So a lot of things like Such Good Luck and Damaged that are based on themes to do. Well, Such Good Luck is based on a Mary and Matthew theme. Damaged is about Bates and Anna, and I decided to actually kind of create concert pieces particularly for the the CD. So every day I think we'll probably recognise the tunes, but some of the cues, you won't be able to say that was specifically for that scene, because actually those tunes have been used, right from series 1 all the way through to series 6.
Well, I know that you have somewhat of a formula in creating the signature sound, and you just mentioned one of them, and that is by creating, pieces that do represent the romantic couples. Talk a little bit about how you came up with the music that creates those situations, the two that you just mentioned in particular.
Yeah, Such Good Luck was actually a massive theme that came in the beginning of series 2, and it was when Mary and Matthew were on a train station and they'd been together at the end of series 1 and they'd kind of fallen out and were no longer together. But there's obviously there was a germ of something, still there. And she says goodbye to him, and he's going off to the First World War. He's actually going off to fight. And the producers wanted me to give people an idea that not only was she saying goodbye to Matthew, but actually we were as well. And it was very likely that he wasn't going to come back. And so, but actually, that didn't happen. But I had I knew the script. I knew that at the end of that series, he was going to propose to her and she was going to accept. And so I just had this sort of idea of trying to make, you know, a piece of music that could actually cover both. And there's a hint in the train station queue that actually some good might come out of this. And I was really sort of pleased with that tune. And consequently, the more I've been asked about the music, the more and more I've sort of realised that actually the music is not specifically about one character or about one emotion, but it's about the relationships between people.
And of course, sadly, Matthew does eventually die at the end.
Oh, he took some of my best tunes to the grave with him.
I know, you've said, but you get to reprise them, you said, final series. Tell us, can you share that with us a little bit?
I've got to be careful, but there is a scene in the, I think it's a penultimate episode for you, where Mary does go back to his grave and she needs to ask him a question. I mean, realistically, she knows she's not going to get an answer, but it's a symbolic moment, and it was just ideal to bring back, you know, that tune. And in fact, it's since Matthew died, there's been a couple of times where you do, you know, it has been possible to kind of, you know, bring back his ghost in some form, you know, or another. But I was very angry with him when he, you know. In fact, I've told him that as well. That he made my life hell once he'd gone.
Yeah, you weren't the only one that was angry. But where is that piece in the is on the second CD, I imagine? Which is the piece that reprises?
Well, actually, no. It is Such Good Luck.
Oh, okay.
It is Such Good. It's that same tune, which kind of we hadn't really used since series two. And it became such a, and I think it was in series three a bit, but we hadn't used it, been able to use it ever since. But it kind of came back, just kind of reminded you, you know, of that. There was just a nice moment to be able to remind people of, you know, Mary's journey and what that relationship had been like.
Well, let's talk about Bates and Anna, because I know that you, like you said, it's about the relationship, but you do have a way of signifying who you're referring to in that relationship through the instrumentation.
Yeah, Damaged is the seventh track on CD1, is basically sort of based on Anna and Bates. I was looking for an idea to kind of signify sort of Bates, and it was before they were even remotely together, but there was a hint that there might be something. And she was, she sort of took pity on him more than anything else. And he had a limp. And I don't know why. I mean, it's kind of slightly odd thinking about it back now, but I came up with this piano sort of tune, that thing that was, had a sort of stutter to it. It's a bit like a limp, but which goes bum, 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 on the piano. And it's kind of, and it was a bit slower than that, actually. And then I added a sort of viola tune which was sort of Anna, and a kind of English sort of folk element to it. And the combination of those two things, that tune and that kind of lilting, slightly stilted piano, repeated piano refrain, has actually been there since episode one, series one, and has gone all the way through to series six.
I'm impressed that you can remember every episode and series.
I'm not sure that I can.
I mean, it was interesting because I know I've read a little bit about your experience in these past several years, and how 6 months of the year you spend on Downton and then 6 months you spend doing other projects. When you were able to return to Downton, was that kind of like, was there a certain level of comfort there? What was that feeling?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very much. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's because I think the hard work is really in what I do is sort of trying to create a sound world, and what works for the kind of harmonic structure of the music, how that works and what its role is, and so after series one, everybody was really happy. You know, it was a massive success. It was more successful than any of us, could have imagined at the time. So it really was. You know, it was a question of kind of keeping on the same path. I mean, obviously every episode has got some kind of new storyline. So there's always a new element in every episode. But I kind of relish the sort of idea of being able to take material that I've worked on before and then kind of present it in a different way and expand on it. So what's really helped as well is that after everybody got the confidence of doing the first series, I was pretty much left, to my own devices. I've had very little, no interference whatsoever in, how the music works. It's basically just been myself and Gareth Neame and occasionally Liz Truebridge, the producer. We've kind of organised the music basically between ourselves. So it's a very, very close-knit, very, tight group. So it's actually been a joy to work on.
What's interesting to me is the series would not be the same without the music.
Thanks.
And one of the things you're going for, though, is that emotional reaction. I mean, you're trying to get inside our heads. How do you do that?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I'm not entirely sure. I can only go on my instinct in a way. I can. There's always a process when I'm working on every cue. If there's working on a cue that they're expecting people to cry at, I think if I haven't cried myself at least in at least one point in trying to establish what the music is, then I haven't succeeded. So I kind of rely on my own. If I've been moved, then I think there's a good chance that the audience will be moved. That's what I'm hoping for. Anyway, there's no real hard and fast, formula, I'm afraid.
Do you think it has anything to do with the sweeping strings that have that, that are just so familiar with a few classic English composers like Vaughan Williams and Elgar?
Yeah, I mean, I listened to them a lot. I've been big fans of both of them, for years and years. Quite a lot of their music is quite, sort of overwrought, and it was just a bit. Some of it would just be a bit too much for Downton. But I mean, there are definitely places where I am required to kind of create a sort of English atmosphere, and strings has been, is a big part of that, that sound.
Can you identify a piece for me that I could use as an example there?
Vaughan Williams' Fifth Symphony is a fantastic piece, I think. The Thomas Tallis Variations, I remember hearing as a kid, but actually, the Elgar Introduction and Allegro, I think, is a fantastic piece. And I played that as a child. When I was about 16 with the Scottish Youth Orchestra, and I was completely blown away with it. That's been a big influence. But actually, when I think about the music, it's the harmony of the music is actually much more like pop music almost than it is like Elgar or Vaughan Williams. It's just dressed in a kind of early 20th century kind of orchestra.
You also said, though, that Ravel and Debussy have been big influences.
Yeah, actually they have, yeah.
And where do we hear those influences? Is there a piece on this recording where you would say, oh, here's what I was thinking of as I started to put down these notes on the page?
Yeah, Life After Death, I think, is one that we'd, I mean, and Story of My Life, the second track on CD one. They've all got that kind of, you know, sort of, you know, harmony of minor sevenths, you know, kind of established on top of one another. And of course, they were also very influential on Vaughan Williams and Elgar too.
And Story of My Life, where do we hear that in the series?
That's another Anna and Bates cue. That's the second cue I wrote for Anna and Bates, and she takes him a tray up in episode one, series one, and he's been kind of basically fired because they don't think he's capable of being of doing his job because of his limp. You know, he can't really sort of carry anything because he's only got one hand, because one hand needs the stick. And she takes him up a tray, and it's kind of, you know, it's of food, and it's going to be his last night there, or so we think. And they don't really speak to each other or even say anything. You know, it's all about what they're thinking about each other, really, and that's that's where that meets you. Again, that cue comes back at the very, very end of Series 6 for a very good reason, and I can't tell you why.
Okay, I won't ask.
Because you haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it yet.
But it will make sense.
I want to ask you about one of the most difficult scenes for you to write, which actually had nothing to do with the characters that we think of immediately, but actually from a four-legged character.
Oh, yeah. Isis.
Tell me about that. How did you handle that?
That was really difficult, actually, because my kids were... we've got a dog, and my kids are pretty obsessed with the dog. In fact, at one point I said they can have a dad or a dog, and they went for the dog. But anyway, they absolutely love the dog. So they actually watched me write the cue for it, and they were actually quite off. I said, well, is that too moving, should it have kind of more respect? We ended up doing a cue that kind of sort of respected the existence of Isis, but this was a sort of natural way of things. So I didn't write a piece of music that was like a tragedy, because it was in the sort of natural way of things. You know, she was old. I think people still find it very moving.
And which piece is that? Is that on the CD?
You know, it's not. Why is that? But there's a semblance of it in a cue which is 18 on CD2, which ended up calling Two Sisters. And it's partly because the music does have this kind of it's quite a moving piece of music, but it's not kind of overly tragic. It's a kind of sort of piece of music that says that this is the sort of natural way of things. And I've ended up calling it Two Sisters because I've used it a couple of times. It was just that kind of music that worked really well for a couple of scenes between Edith and Mary. Again, I can't really give it away.
No, I understand. I want to ask you about the new Gladiators, and I don't know what you can tell me about that, but I'm hearing a real shift in the music at that time. And I know that you would, that you are doing something new in this series musically, and I don't know if there's anything you can share without over-revealing or not.
Well, yeah, I mean, the new Gladiators. Well, it's basically, I think I can sort of say, I can't tell you what happens, but basically, it's like a Formula One race. It's a very, very early, possibly the first Formula One race in Britain, which this must have been 1926. And so we tried, you know, kind of classic sort of Downton, you know, very fast, you know, kind of even Hunt sort of style music over it. And I think we all felt that actually we just needed something, you know, because I think that's one thing about the whole of Series 6 is that there is this idea that the world is changing, and it's actually changing into an era. I know we've still, it's still, you know, almost 100 years ago, but it's becoming more familiar to us now. Whereas when the series started in 1912, you could say it was like a foreign country. Whereas, you know, things like, you know, having a Formula One race, something we still have now. So there was a feeling that the music should kind of reflect that change as well. So in fact, I slightly changed the orchestration, had some trumpets in a, you know, a section of French horns, and actually the music is probably more like a kind of 1950s, you know, film score. You could even, it could be James Bondish, kind of, if that makes kind of any sense.
Oh yeah, sure it does. I'm noticing more jazz elements too in the music on the second CD. You're having an awful lot of fun.
Yeah, there's four jazz tracks on CD2, and they are actually used in the on set. They're cues, you know, music that actually musicians actually play in picture. You know, at various times, we go to a jazz club a couple of times, and so those particular tracks are about as realistic as we can kind of get this day. We've tried to be really, to be as authentic as possible, but we thought it might be nice to kind of break up that CD with, you know, a sort of variety of music.
Now, you mentioned in a recent interview that the series does not end the way you were originally expecting it to end. Can you tell me how you thought it was going to end, but didn't, without giving away how it does end?
Can I do that? I suppose I think I was expecting us to leave the house, or the house gets sold, or something kind of, or, you know, it something happens to kind of, you know, bring it to an end, and actually it doesn't, but it's no less satisfying. In fact, in many ways it's more satisfying the way it does end.
Oh well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
And so I know that Carson and Mrs. Hughes are a huge romantic couple, maybe a little unexpected, but very fun for those of us watching now, how they're going to actually work this out. And anything.
Yeah, have you had episode 2?
Yet? Yeah, just episode 2. Mm-hmm.
So what is it? How does that end? Because the episodes here are kind of slightly different.
Yeah, they're trying to figure out what Mr. Carson's real intentions are with this marriage, if it's a full marriage with all the benefits, or if they're just going to live in a house together.
I mean, there's a fantastic scene between him and Mrs. Patmore. It's so hysterical. I remember that, but she's trying to get across to him what the question that she's got to ask. No, I remember that. Right, okay. So you haven't actually got to the conclusion of that yet.
No,
right.
Okay, that's correct.
All right. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, hold on to your seats.
Oh, well, that'll be fun. Are you feeling any sadness or loss as the series is ending, or is there in some way a way that this is going to continue for you?
I mean, in some ways it is going to continue because there's talk of a film. It's by no means definite. We're talking about a possible live tour, you know, with the, you know, kind of concentrating on the music, but also maybe perhaps having some of the cast on it as well. I mean, I'm constantly asked to kind of go and perform the music and I'll probably kind of carry on doing that. You know, places like, for instance, Japan, I think, has only got Series 2 at the moment. It's massive in China. And although technically I won't, you know, actually be working on, you know, music to picture yet, it's funny, it's kind of, it's still there. It doesn't feel like it's dead. I mean, it took a while to, we had like almost 6 months of parties. You know, there was a rap party when they stopped filming. There was a party when we did the last day of filming in Highclere. There was one for the last day of filming in Ealing Studios. There was a post-production party. There was a party for the screening of the final episode. It kind of, we've had a lot. So it's never felt like an end, because there's always been another party about the end of it.
Well, it sounds like the Downton family really extends to an awful lot of people off the set. Is that how this is felt for you?
Yeah, it's. I mean, I don't normally get to know many of the cast, because my job is usually almost entirely in post-production. But in Downton, I did, especially in the early series, I did get involved in the music that had to be filmed on set. You know, I played piano for Lady Mary. I, you know, organised string quartets. I did some of the jazz. I, you know, played piano for Shirley MacLaine. You know, taught her a song. And consequently, you know, I've got to know, you know, the cast really well, and it's been a very happy project to work on. I mean, some of the people I've met, you know, particularly in post production, they're people, you know, I've made friends with, I'll be, you know, friends with, you know, for the rest of my life probably. And I think there's quite a lot of us, you know, I've felt like that. It's felt like a really good, tight-knit family, and we've all kind of knuckled down and tried to do things to the best of our ability.
So I don't know if you can think of one thing, and it doesn't have to be just one thing, but as you kind of step away from this as a regular ongoing project, what has been most memorable for you? Maybe you just told me what's most memorable, or maybe there's something else.
I think, I mean, it would probably have to be, you know, the theme tune has just become so famous now that it just seems to be instantly recognised, you know, the world over. ITV, who televise it, who broadcast it here, you know, they've been going for 60. They just had their 60th birthday, and they had a whole television series about the best theme tunes over their 60 years. They had the top 20, and Downton was number 6. I think that's probably, you know, quite an achievement. I never thought that would happen, despite the fact I've done the, you know, of all the things I've done, that's quite, and I think I've written something that will kind of, people will remember for years.
Do you feel like this all just kind of fell in your lap? You know what I mean? Not realizing, you know, how big it would be.
I didn't realize. None of us realized. I mean, we'd all done, but I'd been nominated for an Emmy before I'd done music for Little Dorrit and Bleak House, that they were, you know, pretty successful in America as well. And so I was kind of hoping, well, if it's successful as, you know, as those, that'll be terrific. But, you know, I don't think any of us were expecting it anything like, you know, this scale. I'd like to think that I'd done my time, you know, and, you know, deserved a big break like that. But I have to say, it was a big break.
Say, I do have one final question that I missed as I was going along. I know that there are also, we talked about how the romantic, you know, relationships, the music that goes with that. But what about the comedic element?
Oh, yeah.
I know that's kind of sometimes kind of challenging for you.
Well, it was only the comic side was kind of slightly challenging, because we weren't expecting to write comic music. It didn't seem like that kind of show that would need that kind of music. So, when you know we started working on episode one, it never really came up in a conversation that, and they certainly didn't use any comic temp music in those bits either. And then there was a couple of times. It seemed now that I'm thinking back on it, there was a sound problem with one of the scenes in the kitchen in episode one, and there was this sort of idea that we might be able to cover up this sound problem by having a cue. And so it was kind of bustling around, and you know, it was kind of slightly funny, and you know, I wrote this piece for that, and everybody really liked it. And then they actually copied it and used it in a couple of other places in the episode. And then we kind of, from then on, we sort of started thinking, oh well, actually maybe the comic stuff, you know, works with music. And I think the only problem I've had that over with that is the years is finding different ways to do that kind of, you know, comic music.
Mm-hmm. Is there an example you can give me where that, if is that heard anywhere on this Ultimate Collection?
Yeah, I mean, Escapades 1 and Escapades 2 is basically, you know, that comic music.
Is there anything else you want to add? I mean, we could probably go on and talk about every piece and, you know, dive in deeper, but what am I missing? What's the one thing that I have yet to ask you?
The only thing I'd look at, the kind of sort of extra things that you won't hear, sort of hear as part of the Downton Abbey, the show, the series itself, is that I've done three songs based on the some of the main tunes in Downton Abbey. There's a song called "Did I Make the Most of Loving You," which is actually based on the title tune. There's another one called "I'll Count the Days," which is based on "Such Good Luck," which is a Mary and Matthew thing. And I've written another one, which is based on "Life After Death," which is a cue, which is it's not about life after death going to heaven, it's about, is there life after the death of someone you love? And it was kind of, it cropped up in series four, because series four was kind of about the rehabilitation of Mary after Matthew's death. And I've written another song based on that called "Nothing Will Be Easy." And all three songs, the lyrics have been written by Don Black, who's done a fantastic job, I think. And we've kind of just done them as, just because we wanted to sort of do them. Those tunes are kind of, they're not like a lot of tunes you can do in television these days, or even films. You know, a lot of what you ask to get do these days is much more atmospheric stuff. But in Downton, there's always been this kind of element of having a tune, and they've sort of lent themselves, or seem to lend themselves very, very easily to singing.
But we don't hear the singing tunes in the series, is that correct?
You don't.
Okay.
Yeah. So you hear the tunes.
Right.
You'll recognise the tunes. So, yeah, there is. I mean, that's one of the great things about Downton. It has kind of, it does, although it's now finished, it's actually, you know, I'm afraid elements of it are going to carry on.
Well, I think that is the extent of my questions, and I thank you so much for all of the gracious time you've allowed me to expand on everything about Downton.
Thank you, Julie. That's, you know, I'm very pleased to have done that. Thank you very much. All right, you take care.
I
thank
will.
You.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Bye-bye.